You're listening to another football episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns with Banker Bill.
Ryan, you should get off the internet.
And your guy, Bully Rye.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
That's right, everybody. It's another live football episode of Tap Outs and Touchdowns. As always, it's your guy, Bully Rye. And to my proverbial right on the screen is Banker Bill to talk all things football. Bill, what's going on, bud?
What's happening, man? This is the music this week. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, you said you wanted something different. You were tired.
I mean, you're never going to make me happy. It's not going to happen.
You're right. You are impossible to please. A reminder, if you're watching the show live, whether it's facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, Twitter @tapoutsandtds, or the YouTube channel, leave a comment below. And we will read them live on the air. And you can be a part of the conversation. But what I'm super excited about tonight is the special guest that we are going to have for not one, but two segments of the show. Tonight we have the executive producer of the Keep Pounding Podcast Network and my show, The Cat Cave, owner and creator of Tobacco Road Sports Radio and Sports Carolina Monthly, co-host of Embrace Debate and the Believe in Panthers podcast. Please, everybody, help me in welcoming Desmond Johnson to the show. Des, what's going on, bud?
Man, just listening, you rattle that off. I'm doing too much. I need to calm down. I'm out of control. I'm doing good. How are y'all doing tonight?
Good, man. No, well, listen, at least local football season's over for you. So
yeah,
you get a little bit of a reprieve, right?
Well, high school basketball started like immediately. It just overlapped everything. College basketball. So this is actually my busy season where there's like four or five things going on at the same time. But it's a little bit of a distraction from the Panthers and, you know.
And you need those right now.
I definitely need those right now.
We definitely need all the distractions because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, North Carolina basketball just dropped another game this week.
Yeah, well,
last night
it was UConn. I mean, they're fifth in the country, defending national champions, and it was in Madison Square Garden at that. So it was pretty much a Big East home game. So Carolina's going to be good this year. They are not the same team they were the past 2 years. They're deep and they can shoot. So. They're the only thing I have. Tar Heels are the only thing I have. Everything else, the Hornets stink. The Panthers are launching towards their worst season of all time. Like, it's just, that's all I got.
Listen, my Gamecock basketball teams are doing phenomenal. South Carolina women's team, I believe, is 12-0, number one in the country.
Yeah.
And the men's team is actually right now playing a ranked Clemson team in Little John. Both teams are undefeated. So I can't wait to go back and watch that game later on. Let's go ahead and move on here because we have a lot to discuss, Des. The college football playoff season came to an end, and we have the college football playoff set for January 5th. The Final Four was decided. The college football playoff will see Michigan, the number one overall seed, taking on 4 seed Alabama, and the number 2 seed Washington taking on number 3, Texas. So if you've been living under a rock, Florida State went 13-0, undefeated, won the ACC, and missed out on the college football playoff. So, Des, I'm going to open this up to you first and foremost because we've kind of gone back and forth on social media regarding whether or not Florida State was deserving of a playoff spot. So I know your answer, but I want you to let the audience know, do you think the College Football Playoff Committee got it right, leaving Florida State out in lieu of Alabama?
Not only do I think they got it wrong, I think they've been planning this for the past 2 or 3 weeks, ever since the Jordan Travis injury. Like, if you go back on this, what's the main thing that the committee came out with as to why Florida State didn't make the top four? Like, what was their reasoning behind it? That they weren't the same team without Jordan Travis, right? Mm-hmm. So let me ask you fellas this. If that's the case, and they knew this, why did Florida State stay at number 4 for 2 weeks after the injury? That's where they messed up. They should have dropped them then, because then that would have sounded like the truth. In actuality, that's not why they dropped Florida State. They've had other teams go on there before, like Ohio State in 2014. They were on their third-string quarterback and gave them the chance to get their butt whipped, and they went out and kicked butt. They didn't give Florida State the chance. They did everything they were asked to do. They beat everybody in front of them. They beat two SEC teams. They beat more bowl eligible teams than anybody in the top 25. I think they'd be 8 bowl eligible teams. And they won the ACC. They won a Power 5 undefeated. No Power 5 undefeated conference champion had ever been left out. And I know it would have left out the SEC and it would have made the whole entire South upset and whatever. That's just how it rolls. And like they decided a week or two prior, if this scenario happens, this is what we're going to do. Because look at what they did. They not only moved up one team 4 spots, they moved up 2 teams 4 spots. That's never happened before to create this 4. You know, they moved Texas up 4 spots. They moved Alabama up 4 spots. And then they messed up again by putting Florida State ahead of Georgia. Would you say Georgia's a better team than Florida State?
Yeah.
Then why is Florida State ranked ahead of Georgia? Like they did it so that Georgia couldn't creep back into the 4. So they pushed them out far enough where they're at 6 and there's no argument about it. But they kept Florida State at 4 in case Alabama beat Georgia. Because if they beat Georgia and Texas won 2, you can't put Texas in without putting in Alabama, and you can't put Alabama in without putting in Texas. If they're both conference champs, what do? You got Michigan and Washington are locked, undefeated conference champs, right? That leaves Florida State. So you go to the whole, well, they're not as good without Jordan Travis. We don't believe they would beat anybody, so we're going to drop them down to 5. That'll appease Florida State and everybody else, and they'll still get a New Year's Day bowl. But they're undefeated. Of course they deserve to go. They did everything they were supposed to do. They're one of the few teams that didn't drop out of the top 4 all year. And they won without Jordan Travis. So, yeah, they deserve to go. Absolutely.
I've got a lot to say about this, but I know my buddy Banker Bill does too. Bill, I know that you don't think – I know that you think they got it right. Give us your thoughts on the situation. And then what Des had to say about the situation.
Well, I agree with a lot about what Des said. I do believe they were deserving. I think that is a good term. However, should they have been in? No. Did they deserve because they were a conference champion, undefeated conference champion in a Power 5 conference? Yes, that gives you a deserving mark. But at the same time, the own written criteria written by the College Football Playoff Committee says that if you have an injury that would lead to the committee to believe you may not compete well in the conference football or the college football playoff, they can leave you out of the college football playoff. It is written in section 2 of their criteria.
Yeah, Bill, and I don't want to interrupt you. I've got it pulled up verbatim. The principal says, this is a direct quote, selection committee will select the teams using a process that distinguishes among otherwise comparable teams by considering, and the highlighted section of this principle here, other relevant factors such as unavailability of key players and coaches that may have affected a team's performance during the season or likely will affect its postseason performance. So to your point, it is in like what their guidelines are as to how they choose teams. Go ahead, Bill. So sorry.
That's exactly what it is. They told you exactly why they left him out. And was it the right call? I think yes. I think had they played well against Florida, they did not. I'm sorry. I watched that whole game. I'm a Florida fan, obviously. They were on the ropes for most of that game and then, you know, kind of snuck it out a little bit at the end there with 9-point win. And then 55 passing yards against Louisville. You just can't do something like that. Rodemaker didn't prove himself against Florida, didn't play against Louisville. And you put up 55 points in your conference championship and you beat a Louisville team that was clearly overmatched. It just was not a good look. I don't think you can put him in at that point. But I will say this, Ryan, and I brought this up to you. This is a debt that Florida had to pay or Florida State had to pay. It's a 20-year-old debt that Florida State had to pay from the 93-94 season. You want this little story here, Ryan?
I got this one for you.
1993 season, 94 bowl season, Florida State was the number one team in the country. They get beat by Notre Dame. It was considered the game of the century. They get beat by Notre Dame. They drop out of the top spot. Notre Dame takes the top spot. Notre Dame goes on to get beat by Boston College by 2. They drop out of the top spot. Florida State gets moved back to number 1, even though there are 2 other undefeated teams in the nation. West Virginia was one of those undefeated teams. West Virginia beats Boston College, who beat Notre Dame, who beat Florida State. Back then, it was the Bowl Coalition. You only put the top 2 teams in the final game, and they play for the national championship. Florida State got the berth. Only one of those undefeated teams got the berth. It was Nebraska. Florida State beat them 18-16 in the Bowl to win the national championship. Florida State owed us. West Virginia got screwed. Welcome to the club, Florida State.
I work with Skylar Callahan. We do the Believe in Panthers pod. He's also the beat writer for West Virginia for Sports Illustrated. And he actually said the exact same thing last night. He now, granted, he said Florida State should have won, but he's like, this is payback for what happened 20 years ago with Florida State and West
Virginia. They won the title. I mean, they won 18-16 in the bowl. West Virginia, by the way, went and played the Florida Gators in a bowl game. They got beat 41-8.
Probably
not. But at the same time, yeah. I mean, they were another undefeated team. So, yeah.
I will say this, though, before you go, Ryan, that you were mentioning how what the yardage the Florida State had against Louisville. They still had more offensive yardage than Michigan did in Iowa in the Big Ten Championship game. So
Iowa is a massively great defense. I mean, we all agree that game was going to be tough. I said it on this podcast before that they were going to play that game. It was going to be a blowout, but the score was going to be about 14-0. I'll give it 26. So, I mean, Iowa, fantastic defense.
And that's another thing, too. We're all talking about, like, Alabama and Texas and who deserved it and over Florida State. Nobody's talking about Michigan. Their coach got suspended twice this year, you know, and they're undefeated. They went through a cheating scandal, and they're the number one team in the entire thing. And we're not talking about them at all. So, like, there's all kinds of stuff here where it's like, you know, it's not just about the last spot. The entire thing, the way they picked it and how they came about doing it, just needs to be changed, but it won't be. So
I also like how you mentioned that they had a lot of bowl eligible teams. I found it a little bit funny that you said that, because the overall record of the teams that they played were 67-76, and if you remove LSU, that team went 9-3. So you drop it down to 58-73 are the teams that they played. Other than that, most of those bowl eligible teams were 6-6, like Boston College, who they beat by 2 points. So I don't feel like that's a real good criteria. I just don't feel like their entire season of work was all that good anyway. Ryan knows that I was saying all season, Florida State's really not that good. Florida State's really not that good. And then now they lost their starting quarterback. I definitely thought they got it right by not putting them in the best four teams in the country.
Yeah, just a couple quick quotes in the chat. Dylan Schreiner coming in. Florida State should have got it though. Their defense absolutely legit. Matt Buck is glad that Florida State didn't make it. I'm gonna give you my two cents on it. Bill and I were hanging out Friday night watching Florida State beat Louisville. And I looked at Bill and I said, Saturday. Here's my final four.
Saturday night.
I said, here's your final four. It's going to be Michigan, Washington, Texas, and Alabama. I called the final four in the bar. I knew what was coming.
At first, you did mention that there is a very distinct possibility that an SEC with Alabama beating Georgia, an SEC team would not make the final four.
That was never going to happen.
Here's my thought process. So Florida State was not the fourth best team in the country. I mean, we can talk about the wins.
I don't think they ever were.
Why were they ranked that all year?
Because they were undefeated. Sitting undefeated at a Power 5 conference, I never think they were one of the top four teams in the country at any point talent-wise.
See, and this is the thing that bothers me about college football and the SEC in particular, that they get so much of a push because they're SEC. So a team like Alabama, they get the benefit of the doubt because they ran through the SEC. But then a team like Florida State, who opens up against LSU and beats LSU handily, they don't get credit for it because LSU lost three games. You know, but yeah. Alabama gets credit for beating LSU. It's like it's this weird way to keep the SEC teams near the top of the polls, and it juices them throughout the year. I've said this about Alabama for 10 years. If Alabama loses in September and runs the table, they're going to make it to the national championship or the playoff because it's Alabama. They're going to get pushed up to it, and that's exactly what happened this year.
Well, in this case, I think it's fun with the SEC bias. We'll just blame Bobby Bowden, because in 1992, Bobby Bowden was asked as the Florida State head coach to join the SEC twice, and twice he had denied the invitation, saying that it was too difficult to play in the SEC. All of those teams would just beat on each other and would not go to the SEC. So if we want to talk about any SEC bias, we can blame the largest legend in the history of Florida State football for not being in the SEC.
And the media.
Well, yeah, at that point, they were allowed. They were being invited to the SEC, and Bobby Bowden wouldn't go.
A little off topic from Florida State here. Jason Buck coming in the chat. Washington is a number two. He thinks they're five at best, even though they're undefeated. So
well, all year.
Again, I don't think Florida State was ever the number four team in the country. You talk about looting Jordan Travis. We've already read out the guidelines as far as why the committee can choose not to take a team like Florida State. At the end of the day, Florida State loses Jordan Travis in a deficit to South Alabama, North Alabama, whoever it was they were playing. They were down 13-0. Now, granted, they come back and whip up on that North Alabama team, but then you play a 5-win Florida team and you win by 9. You play a number 16 Louisville team, a 10-win Louisville team. You beat them by 9, but that same Louisville team lost to a 6-win Kentucky team the week prior. I think that the committee got it right because they got the best 4 teams in. If you wanted to shift the way things worked, the reason you already mentioned it, Dez, about why you can't put Alabama in and not Texas and vice versa. I think if the roles are reversed and Alabama does win that Texas game that they lose early in the year, obviously nobody's going to complain about the fact that Alabama's in the Final Four. You're still going to have undefeated Washington. You're still going to have undefeated Michigan. But now you worry about what does Florida State now come in, because now you're looking at a 2-loss Texas team. You've still got a 2-loss Oregon team, so they're not going to come in. But now you're going to have a debate whether or not a 1-loss Georgia team or a 1-loss Ohio State team is better than Florida State. And to be completely honest, I think both of them are.
Yeah, they would have – same scenario. They would have – that's why Florida State was at 4. Because if that had happened or whatnot, in your scenario, they would have dropped Florida State to 5 and Georgia would have dropped to 4 from 1.
I'm not sure that they would, because I think the argument – and then unfortunately, I think they probably – Florida State would not have been viewed as the 4th best team in college football. However,
that's true too. Yeah.
One of their criteria at that point would have been that they were a conference champion and Georgia was not. So they might have put Florida State in if all of that kind of goes down and Texas has got a 2-loss, you know, second loss with Alabama undefeated type thing. But it's a mess. It's a mess. You know what fixes this? If Georgia wipes the floor. No, if Georgia wipes the floor of Florida State, we will stop talking about it. There will be no discussion beyond that week.
Here's something no one I've seen is talking about, and this is the problem that the College Football Playoff Committee has created now. What if Florida State beats Georgia?
They'll have a legitimate gripe.
Then they'll be undefeated, and the AP can vote them national champions. You know, they're an undefeated conference champ. They didn't get invited to the playoff. The only way I can see it happen is say Texas. No, it'd have to be Alabama. Alabama would have to win like by field goals, like last second kicks, semifinal and final or whatever, and go through Michigan and then Texas on the other side. So they're not playing two undefeated teams. It would have to work a certain way. But say if it's Alabama, Texas in the national championship, and Alabama just squeezed by Michigan, and Florida State beats Georgia by whatever.
A lot. Yeah,
but say they come out and they just, for whatever reason, just curb stomp Georgia, which I don't see that happening. But let's just say for the conversation it does. Florida State would have a legit gripe to be like, yo, we're national champs. This ain't like the Central Florida thing from a couple years ago. We deserve to be national champs. And there's people out there that'll vote for them. So,
you know,
it's crazy.
I'm more upset. This is going to sound really dumb. I'm more upset that Florida State is playing Georgia instead of Florida State playing Liberty. You talk about, granted, Liberty's not a top five, a power five conference.
No.
But they're 13-0. Listen, I would have rather seen a 13-0 Liberty take on a 13-0 Florida State without Jordan Travis. I think that game would have been more competitive
than
either Georgia, Florida State, or Oregon Liberty, which is what we're getting in a bowl game.
Listen, we're really doing Florida State a disservice here. Like, that defense was probably the best defense out of all these defenses that are about to play in the playoff. Like, they had a championship level defense. And I don't have a problem with them putting Alabama in over Florida State. I have a problem with them treating us like children, the committee. Like, they could have just told us. We were looking for the two best matchups, and this is how we got to it. Instead, they fed us all this BS about, well, we kind of looked ahead, and we didn't know if Florida State could actually win these games, and we asked the coaches, who would you rather play, and all this other stuff. Of course they're going to pick Florida State. They don't have their starting quarterback. Of course they're all going to say that. So, to me, it was more along the lines of, don't lie to me. Like, if Alabama, Michigan, Texas versus Washington is the best matchup possible what we have, just come out and say it. Or don't say anything. You don't have to really tell us anything. Like, just don't say anything at all. But Boo Corrigan, the athletic director at NC State, who heads this committee, decided he was going to come out and try to explain this to us. And the explanation we got was, well, Florida State's really good, and we thought they're top quality, but the quarterback broke their leg. So, you know, tough break. And that was it. Like, to me, that's a problem. That was the problem I had. It was just like, come on, man. You're just – think of the 84 other kids on that Florida State team that just played all year and did everything they were asked to do to get to the playoff, and you even have them in position to think they're going to get in. They didn't even drop after the quarterback got hurt. And then after they finally finish everything, you drop them. Like, you drop them out so you can put in who you want. That's the part that bothered me. If it's really about Jordan Travis, like they're saying, you drop him as soon as he gets hurt and you know he's out for the year. It would have been 2 weeks prior. They couldn't do that because it would have changed the combination.
I'm not 100% sure. See, I hear what you're saying, Dez, and I get it. I think they left him at four just in case Tate Rodemaker, you know, blows the doors off. If he plays well, if they're able to pass the ball against Louisville, say they throw for 250 yards, they're in the playoff.
Just move
the fact that they didn't perform, you know, they didn't show that they could perform. They gave them the opportunity. And they didn't perform, so they dropped them out at the last minute. I think they stay there if they show that they can actually make it happen.
That would have been well and good if they hadn't moved Texas up four spots at the end, and they had
you had a couple ranked teams lose and drop out. It wasn't just that they moved them. You had Georgia drop down, you had Oregon drop down. Those were teams that Texas was behind, so it's not really just moving them. But they did move them ahead of FSU.
They had to move them four spots to get into the playoff. Like if they had moved them,
some of those were ranked teams.
They wouldn't have got in, you know.
Right, but those were teams that lost. They're not just moving them. They're teams that lost.
Except for Florida State.
That's the one they moved them ahead of. Yeah.
Yeah. So like they had to move them down to create the two slots available, but certain things had to happen for that to even go down. So I'm saying they knew this 2 weeks ago. Like scenario A, scenario B, scenario C. This is what's going to happen.
Right.
We're hoping for this, but if this happens, this is what we're going to do. And they would much rather have, you know, Florida State fans mad at them than the entire SEC, because that's what ended up happening. The SEC getting left out of the college football playoff, like it probably should have happened, but there was no way. There was no way with ESPN running this thing. There was no way they're going to keep either Georgia or they probably wanted Alabama and Georgia in, to be honest.
Listen, there's been some fun chat, fun stuff going on in the chat too. Pedro Guillen chiming in. At the end of the day, we get what we get. Next year will be more interesting and fair, which was my point. Like we talk about, you know, leaving Florida State out this year, we don't have to worry about this next year. And I think the only people that are going to be upset when we get to the 12-team playoff are the fans of the teams who finished 13th or 14th in the country. We're not at that point. We're not going to care because the teams that are deserving, your Michigan, Washington, Alabama, Texas, Florida State, Oregon, Ohio State, all those teams will be in the playoff next year if this plays out the way that it does.
Well, what you'll also see, too, not just the last ones that get in, because that's going to be one of those conversations where which one of these three lost teams deserves to be the 12 seed or whatever like that. But you're going to also have an issue with those top four seeds because you're going to – say this situation happens next year, Florida State's gripe is going to be not that they didn't get in the playoff, but they didn't – they had to play an extra game. Yeah, you're going to get in the bye. And they went all year, and people are like, oh, they're on the third-string quarterback. He got concussed last week. They don't play till January 1st. He's going to probably – the second-string quarterback is probably going to play. And they'll have a whole month to figure out what they're going to do. My issue is that they got robbed of the opportunity to get their ass kicked. That's basically what happened. They got robbed of that opportunity. We should have gave them the – like TCU last year. We gave them the opportunity to go out there. They won a semifinal game and then got destroyed in the championship. But in hindsight, that Georgia team was an NFL team. Like whoever showed up that night was probably going to get destroyed too. So like – this whole TCU ruined it type thing, it didn't feel right. They were a Power Five undefeated conference champion too, and proved they deserved to be there by winning their semifinal game. We didn't even give Florida State that.
I still feel like we gave them an opportunity to get their butt kicked by Georgia. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that's gonna happen.
Here's your question, Bob.
We do have Jason chiming in the chat too. He wants to know how we feel about Jim Phillips. He thinks that all this could have been avoided had Jim Phillips not been salty and formed his alliance. Anybody want to touch that?
Jim Phillips is going to – he might be the reason why there's no ACC after 2036. Like, did you see what the SEC was doing, like, all the week leading up to this? Shankey and Nick Saban and some of the coach, they were out there, like, in the media, like, pumping their thing. Like, I don't think Nick Saban telling me he feels like his team deserves to be in the playoff because they've worked so hard all year. Like, what is that? Like, what do you mean? Well, like we worked so hard. We deserve it. We're supposed to be there, blah, blah, blah. No, sir, you're Alabama. You know exactly why you're there. You know exactly why you're there. You did it exactly the way you thought you needed to get in. You played the field, and you did it exactly right. And now Alabama's going to screw this whole thing up because they're going to end up winning the whole thing.
We've done a lot of talking about the Final Four. Are there any notable bowl games that you guys – are looking forward to watching outside of the Final Four? We've already mentioned Florida State, Georgia. We're going to be highly tuned into that game. I mentioned Oregon, Liberty. Liberty's the only other undefeated team to finish the season, and they get to go get smacked by Oregon. Some other really good ranked-on-ranked matchups. Is there anything else you guys are looking forward to? Bill, I'll let you start. Is there any other game playing in the postseason in college football that you're looking forward to watching outside of the Final Four?
Actually, the Alamo Bowl. Arizona versus Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Arizona didn't figure it out till later in the season, and then they started beating some people, and they looked like a pretty decent team. So yeah, they three loss team Arizona, I think, is what they ended up. But I think that's gonna be a fun game to watch. And then of course, my dad's favorite two teams ended up in a bowl this year. So Rutgers at Miami in the Pinstripe Bowl. He's a huge Rutgers fan, but when he was living in Florida, he was rooting for the Hurricanes. So those guys are playing each other. So I'll be watching those games. But I mean, it's a fun time of year, man. And we get, you know, Christmas weekend where they have bowl games all weekend. I think UCF leads it off in the Gasparilla Bowl on Friday, the weekend of Christmas. And then we also get, you know, obviously Christmas or New Year's weekend. And then, I mean, New Year's Day is awesome. So yeah, lots of good stuff.
Yeah. Shout out Bobby Ruff, a defensive coach for the Liberty Flames. I actually wrestled with his older brother in high school. So, I'm excited to watch that matchup.
You tell me that like every week. Like,
I know
those exact
words. It was actually called out in the chat by Jason Buck this week. Got some people wanting to watch Mizzou, Ohio State, Kentucky, Clemson. Dez, any games that you're looking forward to watching? I know you're more of a pro guy, but are there any of these bowl games that you're looking forward to watching this offseason?
Well, I was looking forward to, I can't remember which one it is, Carolina, West Virginia, in their bowl, but
the Duke's Mayo Bowl, West Virginia, North Carolina.
Another thing I have with college football, especially this time of the year, the kids opting out of the bowl game. So it's like if you're not in that New Year's Six or in the playoff, you probably got some kids that aren't going to be there for the game. And Carolina went through this last year where, like, you know, they had a lot of kids just like a lot of the offense opted out. So they didn't have offense when they showed up for their bowl. It's the Orange Bowl because the whole topic of conversation this week has been about Florida State and mm-hmm. they deserve to go. So that Orange Bowl is going to have a lot of eyeballs on it now, maybe more than it would have before, because they're taking on a Georgia team that's lost once in, what, like 30 games or something like that. So if Florida State could actually figure out a way, even if they win by one, you know, if they can figure out a way to topple Georgia in the Orange Bowl and finish the season undefeated, that's going to be the topic of conversation coming out of that week, because you're still going to have the national championship to play after that game is over. So you're going to be comparing Florida State, if they win, to whoever's in the national championship game, and that's going to be leading the conversation then, and then whoever wins it. So to me, it's kind of the Orange Bowl. But between kids hitting the portal, I don't know what the number is now. I know at day one, it was like 1,100 kids or something were in there. It's like 400 or 500 more than it was first day last year. It's hard to keep track of who's where. So I'm going to go with the Orange Bowl because those kids still have something really, really big to play for.
Yeah, I do want to mention,
unfortunately, Johnny Wilson, their top wide receiver for Florida State, just declared for the NFL draft. He will not be playing in the bowl game. Yeah.
Yeah. So
already jumping ship.
Yeah.
You mentioned players not playing. Caleb Williams is sitting out Southern Cal's bowl game.
Yep.
But I'm with you guys. I want to watch the Orange Bowl, Florida State, Georgia. I want to watch, I actually kind of want to watch Penn State, Ole Miss. I think that'll be a decent matchup. And then obviously Liberty, Oregon. I've mentioned that a few times. I love all the ranked unranked matchups. Ohio State, Missouri. There's a lot of really good games coming from the college postseason. We'll talk more about them in the weeks to come on the show. But let's get into some NFL talk before we take our first break, because Dez is going to be picking games with us here shortly. Not a whole lot going on in the NFL. Last week's big news was that the Panthers fired head coach Frank Reich, quarterback coach Josh McCown, and running backs coach Deuce Staley. They are now the first team eliminated from the NFL playoffs. Just want to throw in there. I've already talked about it on the Cat Cave, but Dez, I'll send it to you real quick. Anything that you want to see out of the Panthers going forward the end of the season? We're not going to get the number one pick that they've already traded to Chicago. What are you looking for from Carolina to finish out this season, seeing as that they're 1-11 and already out of the playoffs?
Man, that's such a loaded question.
David Tepper to sell the team?
You know what? That's the sad thing about it. He's had the team 6 years, and the team has doubled in value, like without a winning record. So he's not selling this. He bought it for $2.5 billion. They're worth five. So he just, as long as he just sits here on it another 5 years, he's going to cash out at $10 billion or whatever and be done with it.
It's crazy.
I was just interviewing Joe Person for he'll be on Franchise Players later on this week. Him and Diana Russini just put out this article today on The Athletic that was kind of really peeling back the onion backstage view of what happened this year with the coaching staff and everything. And everything you thought was happening pretty much happened. There was a lot of backstabbing going on. There was a lot of factions. Like, you know, I know you're a wrestling fan, Ryan. I compared it to NWO Hollywood and NWO Wolfpack in the same building trying to run a football team. And that's pretty much what was going on. Oh, yeah. And I just, me and Joe kind of came to this conclusion at the end of the interview. The Panthers just aren't fun to watch. Like, it'd be different if they were losing games, but they were, you know, kind of, even I'll give that to Matt Rhule. I did not like Matt Rhule, especially towards the end, but at least those Panthers offenses were somewhat enjoyable to watch. They weren't boring. This team is boring to watch. Like, it's hard to watch them play. And I think there's only been two, maybe 3 years ever that I felt that way with them. And that was 2001, which to date was the worst season in Panther history. And 2010, the Jimmy Clausen year, the year before they drafted Cam, where they just bottomed out at the end of the John Fox era. We are heading towards the worst season in Carolina Panthers history. Like, that's where we're heading. We don't expect, on Believe in Panthers, we don't expect them to win a game for the rest of the year. Like, what do we have to believe they will? Like, they can't score more than 17 points in any game against any team, anywhere. So it's like, we'll see what happens. But that's Panther-wise. It's just a race to the end of the season right now. And even then, we don't even have our first-round pick. So it's
I'm with you, Dez. Listen, I'm with you. I'm absolutely 100% with you. Listen,
I feel like I've been there.
You can watch Shannon Smith and I on the Cat Cave every week and just how dejected and just completely just down in the dumps we are. Like, what good is there talking about this team? You mentioned, like, the fact that they're boring. Like, even at least with Matt Rhule, we still have Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore on the roster.
Yeah, we can bust
guys away out. To get Bryce Young. Like, that's
and you traded it all away to get him. Like, that's the thing, just perplexing to me. Like, you told us all that you wanted to just parachute a quarterback in and go, all right, cool, that works when you have Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore and these pieces there. But if you're shuttling all them off and panic trades like they did, and you finally get Bryce, you got him, but now you. It just there's nothing there. There's nothing here for him to do anything with. And they just didn't seem to see it. There's one thing, and we're going to talk about this on Believe in Panthers next week. The night of the draft, Scott Fitter and Frank Wright are at the podium. They're talking about what they did to get to Bryce and everything. And David Tepper comes out of like a curtain or something from behind and just starts talking, like just not even on the podium. You remember this? He was just in the floor. You're just kind of talking about all this. There was something he said that I went back to that makes this whole season make way more sense that I think that everyone glossed over at the time. He was talking about Bryce, and he said that the reason why they landed on Bryce was because they felt like Bryce was like a point guard and he could distribute the ball. And this is the part he said out loud that I don't think anybody really realized at the time. David Tepper said, because we drafted Bryce, we felt like we could go and spend less money on skill position players, wide receiver, running back, tight end, because Bryce is such a great distributor that he'd be able to distribute the ball out everywhere. And because of that, we felt like we could save money in these spots. This man said this out loud at a press conference on draft night to us, and we glossed over it at the time. We were like, oh, Bryce Young, we were so aggressive, and you know, they just hired a staff. Nobody heard it. But I kept it in the back of my head. And this past week, I went back and listened to it again. I was like, you know what? That's exactly what they did. They went out and signed DJ Chark and Hayden Hurst and these dudes, Adam Thielen, a 33-year-old Adam Thielen. They didn't really make a huge effort to get somebody big in here. Some rookie running wide receivers or whatever. They overspent on Miles Sanders. And they did exactly what David Tepper said they were going to do. They skimped on the skill positions thinking that they could just kind of let Bryce cook. And that's what we're watching right now. Like, we're literally watching what David Tepper told us back in April. And nobody has said anything about it.
And on top of it, Miles Sanders does not fit the system, does not fit the scheme, does not fit the team, and has been the biggest expenditure and the biggest waste of money that David Tepper has spent. We're going to gloss over the fact that the 49ers blew out the Eagles on the road. The 49ers now currently looking like the best team in the NFC.
You're welcome.
In the NFL.
Yeah, they're the best team.
They're still one game back from the one seed in the NFC. If things go a certain way this weekend, we could have a four-way tie at 9-3 in the NFC for the top seed. So it'll be interesting to see there. But let's go over to the Dolphins. With the Chiefs' loss to the Packers, the Dolphins take the number one seed in the AFC. Bill, do the Dolphins have what it takes to hold on to that one seed until the postseason?
I think so. I think finally they do. Pro Football Focus put out their list of top offensive lines in the NFL, and they actually ranked Miami number 8, which in past seasons they were in the top, the high 20s. So that's fantastic. What an improvement. They've got an unbelievable group of weapons on that team. We know how good Tua's been. I mean, they're still talking Tua for MVP, but if Tyreek doesn't get it after he gets 2,000 yards, I don't know what the heck we got to do for that award. It makes no sense. And their defense, I talked about it last week. They absolutely crushed the number two passing team. Sam Howell's the number two passer in the NFL.
That's crazy.
After last week, C.J. Stroud passed him because he only had 127-yard passing against Miami. That was on the road in Washington. So, yeah, I think Miami can hang on. I think they're becoming a better team as this season goes on, and I think that's probably pretty scary for the rest of the AFC and pretty exciting for us Dolphin fans.
I feel like there's so many really good teams at the top of both conferences, and then it's a bunch of, like, mediocres. Like, once you get past the division leaders, it's, like, who can sort of backdoor their way in. You thought Jacksonville might be able to do it, but they've lost Trevor Lawrence to a high ankle sprain, and the Jags lose to a Joe Burrow-less Bengals on Monday Night Football after Trevor Lawrence goes down. So that NFC South is wide open between the Texans, the Colts, and the Jags. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. A lot of fun stuff coming in the coming weeks in the NFL. We're going to take one quick break. When we come back, Dez is going to stick around. We're going to make our podcast picks when we come back right here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns.
This episode is brought to you by Carolina Business Equipment. With offices in Charleston, Greenville, Columbia, and Florence, Carolina Business Equipment can supply your copiers, computers, and printers anywhere in the state of South Carolina. Call my personal best friend Aaron Thompson at 843-452-8761 for a quote today, and make sure you tell him that Ryan from Tap Outs and Touchdowns sent you. Carolina Business Equipment, you worry about your business, let us handle your technology.
All right, we're back on Tap Outs and Touchdowns. Bully Rye, Banker Bill, and special guest Desmond Johnson here to make our podcast picks here for week 14. Listen, Banker Bill and I, we tied each other last week, 3-2. We are still tied in the regular season standings. Poor Tyler Roberts finished 1-4. That was actually tied for the worst single week we've had. Of course, Shannon Smith went 1-4 as well. But when Shannon came back on the second time, he went 3-1 or whatever it was. So Shannon's sitting looking at 5-5 on the season. So Tyler tied for the worst single week for the season. So, Dez, you've got some pretty big shoes to fill. We did have a couple guys go perfect. Big Tex, JD and Lapino both went 5-0. Matt Buck went 4-0-1. So you got some big shoes to fill, and I'm curious to see how you're going to do. You feel confident about making these picks, Dez?
I do, actually. I do feel confident in it. I'm ready to rock and roll.
All right, let's go. Carolina Panthers, we talked about them in the last segment. A 1 o'clock kickoff at the Saints. This line started off at 5.5. It has dropped to 5 points. Dez, I'll let you start us off. Did Carolina cover this 5-point spread against division rival Saints?
Maybe. I had to think about it. It was almost like a trick question.
Kind of what the point of it is.
Because all their games are rock fights. You know this. You've had to watch the Panther games and talk about them the next week. Every game is exactly the same as the week before. It'll be close. They'll get to the fourth quarter. The Panthers won't be leading, but they won't be down by a lot. They'll be down by like a possession. Bryce or someone on the offense is going to turn over the ball, and they're going to lose the game at the end. And you're going to look at the box score and be like, oh, that was kind of a close game. But if you watched it, you're like, that wasn't really close at all. That was not a close game. It was excruciating to watch. I think they will cover that. I think I picked Saints 21-18, the same score as last week. So, yeah, I think they can do that. So
you're saying the Panthers cover it 21-18 with a loss, but albeit covering that 5-point spread.
Yeah, but I'm picking the Saints to win the game.
Saints win, yeah, I'm right there with you. Bill, what say you, Panthers at Saints?
Are we getting Derek Carr for this week? I don't know.
I don't think so. Right? He's got a rib injury plus a concussion. Yep.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to steal some crab legs this week. Yeah. And I'm going to say that the Saints cover this 5. I think they played pretty well against Detroit last week. That was a really close game. And a lot closer than we thought after the Detroit went up 21-0. I know you were sweating, Ryan. And my dad was yelling because he needs the Saints to win that division. And I'm going to give them a win this week. I think they beat the Panthers. You said it, Dez. The Panthers don't score more than 17, and I don't think they're going to score more than 17 against the Saints. Saints have pretty good defense, and I think the Saints score 28.
There's no reason to believe they will.
Listen, at all. The Panthers have a really good pass defense. but they have a really bad run defense.
Yeah.
With Jameis Winston back there throwing the ball, they're going to rely on Alvin Kamara. I think this is going to be a running back game. You're going to see a lot of Kamara. You're going to see a lot of Chuba Hubbard. I think this is a low-scoring game. I think the Saints win, but the Panthers cover this spread. So I'm with Dez on this one as well. Next up, another 1 o'clock kickoff. The Rams at the Ravens. The Rams winners of three straight. The Ravens a 7-point favorite in this game. Bill, I'm going to let you start us off here. Who you got? Rams at Baltimore on Sunday at 1 o'clock.
I don't think the Rams are able to run with the Ravens at all, especially at home. Are you kidding me? Ravens have the best defense against quarterbacks in the NFL, and that's what the Rams really have. And you got Puka Nacua. He's banged up, and I just think the Ravens are going to smoke the Rams there at home. So
all right, Dez, what,
I hate seven. That's a huge spread, but they're going to cover it.
All right, Dez, what say you? Ravens hosting the Rams.
Two fun facts about Lamar Jackson. He's played 73 games in his career. In the regular season, this dude is 54-19 in the regular season as a starter, which is insane. Stat number two. Lamar Jackson's only lost to the NFC once in his entire career, and that was last year against the Giants. He's only lost to the NFC once. And he's won, what did I just say, 54-19 in the regular season?
Yeah.
Dude don't lose in the regular season. I don't know what it is. It doesn't matter who you put around him. Lamar, if he's healthy and he's on the field, especially at home, the Ravens are going to win that game. I know the Rams are kind of on the come up a little bit, but I'm picking the Ravens, and I'm going to take the points too.
Yeah, listen, the Rams are a conundrum to me. They look like they can compete with the San Franciscos of the world. They look like they can compete with the Seahawks. They look like they can compete within their division, and then they'll go out the next week and lay an egg. Puka Nacua got banged up last week, finished the game with another crazy stat line. You've got a healthy Cooper Kupp. You've got a healthy Kyren Williams. I think the Rams are going to keep this game closer than you guys expect it to, at least until the end of the game when the Ravens pull away. You're playing in Baltimore, and like Philadelphia, outside of last week, the Ravens love getting that home cook officiating in Baltimore. So I'm with both of you guys. I think the Rams keep it close for a while, but the Ravens pull away late and cover this spread.
Hey,
let's,
Ryan.
What's up? What's up?
I just wanted to point out that every game's close until one of the teams pulls away.
I swear. This guy. We've got a guest, Bill. All right. I got nothing to say to that. They are close. Every game starts 0-0. You're absolutely right, Bill.
Yeah.
Let's go to the 4 o'clock games. Seattle at 49ers, an NFC West divisional matchup. The 49ers are a 10.5-point favorite. I'll start us off here so that Aaron Thompson doesn't come in the chat and accuse me of never going first. Listen, Seattle, I just talked about the Rams being that team that looks good 1 week and looks bad another. The way that the 49ers beat up on the NFC leading Philadelphia Eagles, now they get a home game against the Seahawks. Give me San Francisco with the 10.5 points. I'm sure that's going to make Shannon Smith happy. But the Seahawks don't stand a chance. There's no Kenneth Walker in this game, so they're still relying on Zach Charbonnet by himself to run the football. You do have a monster at wide receiver in DK Metcalf for that offense. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is coming on very well for the Seahawks, but they just don't have enough to keep up with an all-healthy 49ers. I've said this before. If the 49ers keep everybody on that offense healthy, they are the best team in the NFL. You lose Debo Samuel for a couple games, and you see him slide off. I believe they lost three straight, if I'm not mistaken, unless like it was – 3 of 4.
Yeah,
but nevertheless,
I think they're from this game too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So give me the 49ers in this game to cover. Dez, let's go over to you. What say you? Seattle at San Francisco.
Oh, I'm all on the 49ers right now. Like it's December now. This thing's about to start going downhill. I think the 49ers are gonna be the one seed when this is all over with. I felt like they were the most talented team offense and defense when the season began. I feel like the Panthers helped them by sending off McCaffrey to them for a bag of peanuts last year. And they've literally been on this run ever since they got McCaffrey. They're between the personnel they have and the offensive mind of Kyle Shanahan. They're just so hard to defend. Like they just have so many pieces and it all fits. And you can put a Brock Purdy at quarterback and go. You can put Ryan at quarterback probably, and they're probably going to score 21 points. Like, come on, you know what I mean? Like
they tried that last year in the NFC Championship.
They tried to put everybody back there at the end. But yeah, I just if the 49ers are healthy, I agree with you, Ryan. They are the best team in the NFC, or excuse me, the NFL. And I'm trying to rack my brain as to who's going to really challenge them, because that Eagle game was kind of an eye-opener. The Cowboys didn't match up very well. So I don't know. Detroit, maybe? Detroit might be early. I don't
Detroit's,
know, man.
Detroit's defense is not there yet. Defense is not. They go up 21-0, and the Saints almost win that game.
Yeah.
Detroit's just not there defensively.
I'm going to go with the 49ers. I don't know about 10.5. That's a large spread for the NFL game, especially a division game. It is at San Francisco, though. I'm just picking the 49ers. I don't know about that spread.
All right. What say you, Niners hosting the Seahawks?
I'm going to agree with everything you guys said, Dez. That Eagles game was definitely an eye-opener. Deebo Samuel is a monster. He terrifies me. That guy took that game over. They are going to shred the NFC at this point. If they continue to play like they did on Sunday, that was just insanity. Watching that game was crazy. I couldn't believe what they were doing to the Eagles. The Eagles looked like they were hapless up there, and they had been a one-loss team prior to. I think I'm going to take the 49ers on this one. The last game they played was in Seattle. It was, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I think it was. 2 weeks ago. That's unbelievable. It's like a Eagles in the middle, sandwiched by the Seahawks. They beat them 31-13 in Seattle. So now with this being in San Francisco or Santa Clara, whatever you want to say,
that's what that point spread.
Gonna cover the 10.5. Yeah,
that's why that point spread's what it is. They exposed the Eagles too, like at least the secondary. Oh, like
scary.
That is a weakness that people are going to start exploiting now because of what the 49ers did last week. So,
Not everybody has a Deebo, though.
CMC and George Kittle. And
Bill, do you remember where Deebo Samuel went to school?
Let's not forget Ayuk. He's pretty good, too.
But just throwing it out there, I don't know if y'all remember where Deebo Samuel went to school, but I know a little bit about.
Did he play girls basketball?
We didn't play women's basketball, actually. All right. We got two more games to pick. Let's go to an AFC divisional matchup, or not a division matchup, AFC matchup. This looked like it could have been an AFC championship preview until the Dolphins came on, like I expected them to do. The Bills at the Chiefs, this line has moved a full point. This game started off a 2.5-point favorite for the Chiefs. It has fallen to 1.5. So Vegas knows something. Bill, I'm going to let you start us off here. Buffalo Bills at the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs coming off of a loss to the Packers. The Bills coming off a bye week. Who you got in this game?
This one's wild. Chiefs can't lose this game. They can't. They're not going to get the one seed if they lose this game. They're at home. It's a late game on Sunday. We talked about last week that the Philadelphia game was a late game. You know, we'll call it a half night game because it gets dark early here in the wintertime. But the Chiefs have to win this game. You said it slid to 1.5. I still believe that the Chiefs are going to win this game. The Bills, we don't know what Bills team we're going to get. They go crazy, and then they're terrible. But Chiefs have had a pretty good defense all season long. It seems to be faltering a little bit here lately, but I have to believe that the Chiefs win this game. I know they're short on weapons. They really don't have anything at wide receiver other than Rashee Rice. I think the Chiefs cover 1.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you there, too. I think there's no doubt in my mind – Buffalo on the road. Buffalo is not the team that everyone expected them to be. Josh Allen is not who everybody thought that he was prior to the season. So I'm going to go Kansas City as well. Dez, what say you? Bills at Chiefs.
Remember the cool fact with Lamar Jackson from a couple minutes ago?
Yep.
Pat Mahomes is 20-3 in December for his career. They're at Arrowhead. It's December. Like you said, they've got to win this game just to keep pace with the top of the AFC. Bills are kind of hit or miss this year. I learned a long time ago not to pick against Kansas City, like 2-3 years ago. I was so against the whole Pat Mahomes phenomenon. I just didn't want to believe it that it was happening. Yeah. And I just constantly kept picking against them. He just kept proving me wrong and making me look stupid. And I finally just gave up. I was like, you know what? I'm not betting against Kansas City until this dude is gone. So I'm going to pick Kansas City just because they've been in this spot before and they usually emerge victorious on the other side.
All right, I'm right there with you. Listen, last game on the schedule, last game on the slate for pick'ems here. We've talked a lot about the Eagles and their loss to the 49ers last weekend. They now go into Dallas as a 3.5-point dog on Sunday Night Football. The Dallas Cowboys hosting the Philadelphia Eagles. Listen, I'm going to go ahead and start us off here. I'm taking the Eagles. I don't think you lose back-to-back games. I think there's a lot to be said. Now, you mentioned it. San Francisco exposed Philadelphia. If you make Jalen Hurts a pocket passer, he cannot sit in the pocket and just sit around. He's got to get mobile. Now Dallas has players in that linebacker spot that can sort of contain Jalen Hurts. I don't think they can do it the whole game. I think if the Eagles don't win outright, the Eagles are going to cover this 3.5-point spread. This game might be just a field goal game. So give me the Eagles. Dez, I'll flip it over to you. What say you?
I think it's going to be the Cowboys, and I don't think it's going to be close, to be honest. I think the Cowboys are going to blow them out. I feel like Dak is starting to get some MVP talk. Deservedly so. He's having a great year. I don't know. I just feel like they're going in different trajectories right now, which is crazy to say. The Eagles have lost two games all year, but there's just something about the stench of what they did last week that makes me feel like they're not going to just be able to easily wash that off and go beat Dallas in Dallas. Like, you go from a complete and utter beatdown from the 49ers, where they basically plunked them and took their lunch money on national TV repeatedly, like over and over for like 3 hours. And now they're going to go to Dallas and play the Cowboys on a Sunday night, a national televised game. I think the Cowboys are going to be ready for them. And the Cowboys need that. The Cowboys need a game like that to show that they belong at the top of the NFC. This is the Cowboys' opportunity to show that. The Eagles have been there for the past year or two. If the Cowboys win this game, now you can legit talk about the Cowboys as being a Super Bowl contender. I think the Cowboys are going to be amped up for it. They're as healthy as they're going to be. I'm going to pick the Cowboys.
All right, Bill. We got one Eagles, one Cowboys. You're going to be the tiebreaker here. What's saying you, Eagles at Cowboys?
I think I agree with Dez on this one. I mean, the reality is the Dallas Cowboys have a better points per game offense and a better points per game defense than the Philadelphia Eagles do. In Philadelphia, when they played early in the season, it was a 5-point game. It was kind of a tit for tat. They were going back and forth, and it got close late. And I think now, like Dez said, Philadelphia got exposed last week. That was not a good look for the Philadelphia Eagles. They did not play well in that game. They were never really in it after the first quarter. It was a beatdown from that point forward. And I just don't think you pick yourself up and go down to Dallas and beat another really good team. I don't think it happens. Like you said, Dak's going to play well. We'll see what Jalen Hurts can do. That guy's a fantasy monster. No matter win or loss, that guy puts up points. But I don't think they're going to be able to stop Dallas. And I think Dallas wins this game.
Jalen Hurts banged up. Got the banged up knee. He's not exactly as mobile as he was last week.
He went in questionable last week, and he still had a pretty good game. So, yeah. He's dealing with what running quarterbacks deal with. They get hit.
Yeah.
So.
All right, Dez, this has been a pleasure. Anything you want to plug before we say goodbye to you and take our final break and go into some fantasy football talk for the last 10 minutes of the show?
Again, I'm doing too much. That's a lot of stuff on the screen. Believe in Panthers. Even though the Panthers are losing it at an incredible rate, we're still on every Tuesday live. Myself, Panthers all-time leading rusher Jonathan Stewart, and Panthers Sports Illustrated beat writer Scott Callahan, we're on each week. We will go through the pain of whatever happened on Sunday. We'll talk to you about it, help you through it. And then we help you vent, too, because we're live. So you can come on in the comment section. You can give us opinion. You can tell us, you know, what you saw. We'll react to it. We've branched out a little bit. We're kind of used. This is the fourth year I posted Believe in Panthers. So I've yet to have a winning season with the Panthers as a host. So we've kind of gotten used to pre-planning. Okay, what happens when we're one and whatever? Like, what do we do then? We start doing other things inside the episode. This past week's episode is talking about the college football playoffs. So you can watch us there. Go subscribe to the Tobacco Road Sports Radio YouTube channel. It's at youtube.com/@Tobacco Road Sports Radio. The Keep Pounding podcast network is located there, where you can catch Ryan and Shannon and Michael Davis, who's returned with their show, The Cat Cave, each week. Multiple Carolina Panther formatted podcasts that are there in video form. As well as some other good stuff here out of the state of North Carolina. So if you're a sports fan in North Carolina, definitely come check us out. Subscribe to us on all the big podcast platforms and YouTube channel, and we'll keep the content coming.
Dez, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. I don't think I've had you on in a while. So thank you so much for all you've given us, almost the full hour. So I greatly appreciate your time. Awesome. And you and I will talk soon, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I think you're coming on Franchise Players later on this week. So I want to talk a little WWE. So we're going to probably do that a little bit, because I can only talk so much Panthers this week. I'm Panthered out right now. So, yeah, I'll see you later on this week.
All right. Sounds good, Dez. We'll see you. Desmond Johnson, Tobacco Road Sports Radio, and everything else he's doing. We're going to take our final break because we're running late. We're going to take our final break. When we come back, we're going to talk all things fantasy football, bullies, buys, and sells. The penultimate episode for Bullies, Buys, and Sells and Bill's Factor Crap this season. Stay tuned. We'll be right back right here on Tap House and Touchdowns.
Established in 2008, One Stop Repairs in North Charleston, South Carolina, is your one-stop shop for all of your electronic repair needs. Specializing in cell phones, tablets, computers, laptops, and game consoles, One Stop Repairs offers reputable and quality service with the quickest turnaround time and the most competitive prices in the Lowcountry. You can find them on Google with an exceptional 4.9 star rating or on Facebook by searching for One Stop Repairs. Call for a quote today at 843-343-6310. That's the number one, One Stop Repairs.
All right, we are back. Tap outs and touchdowns. Bully Rye, Banker Bill. Before we get into fantasy football talk, I got to call out. We've had a lot of people in the chat, and we actually haven't been able to call anybody out. Volley Polly, Tim Costello has been in here. I did mention Matt and Jason Buck, the Buck boys in the house. Pedro Guillen, Mama Frick was in here for a minute. Our friend in Seattle, super fan Andy, was in the chat. Shannon Smith was watching us as we picked San Francisco. So a lot of people in the chat with us tonight. Thank you all for being here. If you haven't already done so, make sure you share the Facebook page, facebook.com/tapoutsandtouchdowns, to help others find the show. We are pushing towards our 1,000 followers, and we are on the final stretch of that.
I should share it at some point, probably.
Yeah, you probably should.
I probably should. I don't like to post much. I'm sorry. Social medias.
That's all good, man. Well, listen, we have reached the end of the show where we talk fantasy football, and we're going into buys and sells. I had another decent week last week, Bill. Your guy went 5-3. You went 4-4. That brings us collectively, you to 57-47 against my 53-51. Now, listen, I said before the break that this is the penultimate episode for buys and sells in Factor Crap. Most leagues are entering in playoff season, whether your playoffs start next week or the week after. We are at the playoffs. So buys and sells isn't going to really help you if you're not in the playoffs. And it's not going to help you if you're already in the playoffs, because you're going to have to start somebody regardless. So we will end buys and sells next week with our last edition of it. And then we'll sort of recap it at the end of the show. Bill, you ready to take a giant dump on I should mention, I think I mentioned Mama Frick was in the house. Mama Frick wants to let us know that she's still
there. Have to finish that sentence. You just can't say, Bill, are you ready to take a giant dump?
Are you ready to take a giant dump on my picks this week?
Yes! There we go. Yes! No.
Let's finish it. All right. Bullies,
that was a wrestling moment. Yes.
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 Okay.
Yes. I'm loving Bill getting into it now. All right. Bullies, buys for the NFL week 14. Let's start off. Words are hard. At quarterback, Justin Fields. I'm buying him projected 22 points. Listen, if you look at the last time that he played the Detroit Lions, who was his opponent this week, he put up 24 fantasy points, ran for over 100 yards. Lions are giving up the fifth most points to quarterbacks. After going up 21-0, they let the Saints not only make a comeback, but backup running quarterback Taysom Hill had 59 carries and a rushing touchdown against them last week. I think we get another big week out of Justin Fields. Bill, fact or crap, Justin Fields exceeds 22 points.
Fact. That's all I'm going to say. You covered everything. He scored 24 points coming back from that injury, by the way. It was his first game back. He should have been rusty. He put up 24. He's going to put up 22. Running quarterback. He's going to get a touchdown. I think the Bears beat the Lions this week. No, I'm kidding. That's not going to happen. But I think he gets 22.
All right. Let's go over to running back. A guy that we kind of talked about a little bit. We're talking a lot of Panthers on the show tonight. Chuba Hubbard projected 13.2 fantasy points. Listen, the Panthers are terrible. But with the new guy at charge, they have singled in on the running game. 25 carries for Chuba Hubbard last week, over 4 yards a carry. Twice he found the end zone. He scored in his last three touchdowns in his last two games. It does have a tough matchup with the Saints, but we mentioned it. It's going to be a run game for both teams. I think you're going to have a lot of opportunities for Chuba Hubbard to get the rock. I like him to exceed 13.2. If you're in a bind, you could probably, play Chuba Hubbard and get away with it this week. Bill, what say you? Factor crap.
Yeah, it's funny. Even when they didn't focus on or feature Chuba Hubbard, I always thought he was a pretty good running back when he would come in to just spell whatever running back they were starting. And now that they're using him as their feature back, he really is pretty decent. And even though they have a bad, offensive line, he looked pretty good last week. So against New Orleans, like you said, I think he's going to actually – this is going to be a fact. I think 13.2 is definitely attainable, and he'll probably get there. They're using him a lot, and he looks decent. So, yeah, I think I would stick with him this week. I can't believe that I actually dropped him. That stinks. I actually had him on one of my – I know. I had him on one of my teams, and I dropped him. But, yeah, I think he's going to get a lot of the ball this week. He's gonna get an opportunity to get that 13.2.
All right, let's get him a wide receiver bye this week. I'm going to your Miami Dolphins, not Tyreek Hill, because you're obviously starting Tyreek Hill. But Jaylen Waddle projected 15.7 points. The Dolphins offense runs through Tyreek Hill, but Jaylen Waddle has the same propensity to get deep and find the end zone. He's had 6+ targets in all but 2 games this season, including week 12 against the Jets, where he had 8 catches on 8 targets. This week, the Dolphins get the Titans, allowing the 6 most points to opposing wide receivers. On Monday Night Football, I think Waddle and Hill both find the end zone in this game. Roll with Waddle this week. Bill, factor crap. Jaylen Waddle exceeds 15.7 points.
Well, I hate to call it on my team, but I think this is crap, Ryan. I just don't think he does it. He's only beaten 15.7 3 times this season, and I don't think he does it. The odds aren't there. So I just feel like while he can do this, and Jaylen Waddle is the number one wide receiver, they were calling him 1B. But, I mean, this offense runs through Tyreek Hill, so they're going to throw it to Tyreek Hill a bunch of times. And then Jaylen Waddle gets the scraps, and that's going to be really, really dependent on whether or not he gets in the end zone. Like you said, you think they're going to score? I don't. I think Tyreek gets 2, and they're going to find other ways with A-Chan. I mean, A-Chan's a monster again. So, yeah, I call this one crap.
All right, let's move over to tight end. Bullies by tight end is Dalton Schultz of the Houston Texans. This is probably my riskiest pick of the week. Spoiler alert, I don't like his quarterback matchup this week. And Schultz missed last game with a hamstring injury, and he's been limited in practice this week. But wide receiver Tank Dell suffered a broken leg in last week's win over the Broncos. I think that means more targets for Dalton Schultz if he plays. The Jets are giving up the 14th most points to opposing tight ends. And again, more target share. I love the prospect for a really good PPR outing for Dalton Schultz if he plays. Bill, factor crap, Dalton Schultz 8.9.
Just going to call it a fact. Tank Dell being out means that more targets for everyone else. He was the best wide receiver and having a really good – you saw what happened to Nico Collins last week when Dell went down. He got a bunch of catches. But Schultz has been really good all season, so I think you got to play him.
All right, let's go over to Bully Sell since we're running a little bit late tonight. And I'll start off with quarterback. I just talked about his tight end, but I'm selling C.J. Stroud this week at 19.9 points. He's got a tough matchup.
Out your mind.
Yeah. Well, I can be out my mind all I want.
Leading passer in the NFL.
Listen, he's got a tough matchup with the Jets, allowing the 5th fewest points to opposing quarterbacks. He's also we just mentioned it. Dalton Schultz is going to get more targets with Tank Dell out with a broken leg. Given one fewer target for Stroud to throw the ball to. If Dalton Schultz misses this game and I lose my pick on Dalton Schultz, that's 2 playmakers he's down. I think this game is going to be a low-scoring one, and it doesn't bode well for C.J. Stroud and his projection, of which he's missed 2 of his last 3 games. Bill, I'm guessing you're crapping all over C.J. Stroud being a sell this week.
You would think, huh? No, I'm going to go fact on this one, Ryan. I think you're right. C.J. Stroud's the number one passer in the NFL. He just passed Sam Howell this week. He has the highest yards passed for this season, but the Jets just don't give up passing yards. They just don't. Even Tua struggled to get passing yards against him. He had a pick 6 and a second interception. The only person that's done anything recently was Josh Allen in one of his weird games where he actually played well. He doesn't do that very often anymore. But I just feel like C.J. Stroud, Tank Dell's going to be out. It's going to be tough. He's going to be looking for Schultz. But Jets play really good defense, and I think they're going to hold him down. 19.9 is a lot.
All right, let's move over to running back. This should actually come as a surprise to a lot of people. Travis Etienne projected 15.6 points. No Trevor Lawrence more than likely for this game means a heavier workload for the fellow former Tiger in Travis Etienne. However, he's dealing with his own nagging rib injury, and he gets a Browns defense ranked 13th against opposing wide receivers in fantasy. You're probably starting him. But if you have another option that you're weighing against ETN this week, you might want to go with your other option. Bill, factor crap. ETN
wrong again, Ryan. Wrong again, Ryan. The injury was worse last week. He was actually a game time decision. This week he's just questionable, but they're saying he's going to play. He's better off than he was last week. Like you said, Trevor Lawrence being out, they're going to ride ETN like the Bronco that he is. Is he? Or maybe he's a Tiger. Oh, he is a Tiger. Isn't that where he went to school?
Oh,
he went to school.
Up.
Oh, he did go to school there. Kind of like Debo.
Oh, you're getting freaking muted in 2 seconds.
ETN, this one's crap. ETN's going to go big this week.
All right, let's go over to wide receiver, and this should come as no surprise. Adam Thielen projected 13.1 points. It's time. Volley Polly asked about this last week on the show. It's time to finally say goodbye to Adam Thielen as a top wide receiver in fantasy. The past 2 weeks, he's been passed by rookie Jonathan Mingo in both targets, receptions, and fantasy points. I mentioned with Hubbard that this team is going to be very run heavy throughout the end of the season, and they're going to need to this week as New Orleans is allowing the third fewest points to wide receivers and the 10th fewest to opposing quarterbacks. Despite having his first big game of the year against New Orleans earlier in the season back in week two, where Thielen scored 20.4 fantasy points, this is a different team, and Thielen should remain on your bench and only played in the playoffs in the case of an emergency. Selling Adam Thielen. Bill, what say you?
This is a fact. I agree with everything you just said, and I believe that he's pretty much it's that coaching change. You can see there's a drop-off there. Chuba Hubbard's stats went up. Adam Thielen's stats have gone down. They're not looking for Thielen anymore. Like you said, Jonathan Mingo having bigger games. Trying to get the youth involved is what they're doing. Adam Thielen is an old man. Put a fork in him. This one's fact.
All right, let's
go. He's an old man at 33 years old. NFL old man.
And Volley Polly is saying it's the time that he puts Addison in. Yep, it's time, bud.
Jefferson comes back this week.
That I think it bodes well for Addison if that's the case.
I don't know.
You're gonna have him focused on Justin Jefferson. Addison's gonna get open a little more. All right, let's move over to the tight end that I'm selling this week, and that's Dalton Kincaid of the Buffalo Bills, projected 10.3 points. Don't really have anything bad to say about Kincaid. Despite four straight games scoring 15 or more points from week 7 to 10, he fell off in both weeks 11 and 12, combining for 19 total points in those 2 weeks. Even coming off of a bye, the Chiefs are coming off an inexplicable loss to the Packers that dropped them out of the number one seed in the AFC, and they're already allowing the 6th fewest points to tight ends. Playing on the road in Kansas City, I just don't like Kincaid to hit this week. Bill, fact or crap, Kincaid, 10.3 points.
Call this one a fact. Casey just does not give up points to tight ends. I know this guy gets quite a few targets, but I just don't feel it against Kansas City. That defense is pretty darn good, so I give you a fact on that one.
You only crapped on two of my picks this week.
Twice. They're right, too. They're right.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad that you're finally starting to agree with me. It means that I'm making better decisions here. we got two questions for Bully's Buddies this week. Both come from Volley Polly. Should I go ahead and grab Brian Robinson now or wait until after the Commanders bye? Listen, if you didn't pick up Brian Robinson and he's there, and go get him now. Like, don't wait. Don't wait for it. Just go get him. There's no wait. No point in waiting. Yeah. Like, you've probably got somebody in your roster you can let go. Go get him. Bill, you agree?
Yeah, I agree.
All right. His other question, Justin Herbert against Denver, Matt Stafford against Baltimore. We all took Baltimore to win that game big. They're playing in Baltimore. I don't like Matt Stafford's chances up there. I'm taking Justin Herbert. Even though Justin Herbert put up all of six points against the Patriots last week, I like Herbert here. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you're looking at Matt Stafford up against the defense that gives up the least number of fantasy points to quarterbacks there in Baltimore on the road in the weather. No, I don't think so. I think you got to go with Herbert.
All right, that's Bullies, Buys, and Sells, Bill's Fact or Crap, and the Fantasy Football Bullies, Buddies questions. We have reached the end of the show, and my favorite segment, I hate that we're going to have to rush it, but I know we're up against it. Bill, your Homer's Corner, you want to talk a little bit about the transfer portal in college football?
Ryan, I have to tell you a story. It's not a very long story. I was talking to my dad this morning, and we were having a conversation about college sports. In fact, it was college basketball, believe it or not. We were talking about how we hate the NBA. So we started talking about college basketball, and we were talking about Rutgers basketball because, of course, my dad's a huge Rutgers fan, and he was telling me that did you know that the player that leads UConn in scoring played for Rutgers last year?
I had no idea.
Yeah, and another great player that played for Rutgers named, I think it was Mulcahy was his last name. Dad and I spent a lot of time watching games together, and he transferred as well. And I had this moment that I realized that I glimpsed a little bit that the transfer portal and the fact that these players, and I've been watching Florida Gators football the last couple of days, and I'm watching the players go into the portal, including a five-star safety that was a sophomore this year that got outplayed by a couple freshmen. He decided to transfer. I get that a little bit, but he's still a good depth piece, right? Or maybe he's a late bloomer as a five-star that came in. I glimpsed a time when I don't care about college sports anymore, because you can't feel invested in these players. You can't because you're excited. He has a great season. He's a freshman. Oh, he's great. And even playing for Florida. I mean, Florida's still supposed to be a destination, right? But if you're a fan of, say, South Carolina, who isn't on that very top tier up there with the, you know, the best teams in the land, and you have a player that you're so excited about. He's a young guy, four-star, comes in, has a great season, and then he's gone because Texas wanted him. I glimpsed it, man. I glimpsed it. I glimpsed when I don't care anymore. I really did. I actually was like, I don't care about college basketball right now because of what you just said, Dad. Don't tell me about that anymore. Because the transfer portal is disgusting. And I'm trying to figure out, other than the individual player who thinks it benefits him, but I think maybe in the long run, the fact that he lacks the ability to commit to something might be a detriment to that player. I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out who this benefits, other than the people that are willing to spend money and hand money to the NCAA to make sure that they get all the best players.
Listen, I originally was going to talk about the Detroit Lions being one game away from the number one seed in the NFC, but I changed my mind literally a second ago, and I'm talking transfer portal NIL.
Yeah.
When the season was over, South Carolina had – there were rumors of a number of people leaving to go elsewhere, including Juice Wells, who at the beginning of her season was our number one receiver. He is entering the transfer portal. Rumors are that he's going to Texas, and rumors are that Texas had been in touch with him before they should have been. Let's just say that. A lot of the guys that were projected to be leaving into go to the transfer portal have signed NIL deals with the Garnet Trust, which is essentially our NIL firm that the university has put together to help players seek out their own NIL deals to make their own money on their name, image, and likeness. To your point, not just the transfer portal, but the transfer portal and NIL, without any sort of regulation, is ruining college athletics.
Mm-hmm.
I have been on record to say that college players who bring in millions of dollars to their university, to their athletic department, deserve to be able to make money off themselves.
Sure.
You and I are both super psyched about NCAA football coming back next year, right, from EA Sports. When Jadeveon Clowney was at South Carolina, there was about 10 guys in the country, including Jadeveon Clowney, who were being investigated for making money off of selling autographs. The NIL was intended to allow things like that to happen. It was not intended for players to be offered $2.5 million to go play at Southern Cal, to go play at Texas, to go play at insert school's name here, instead of going to play in the NFL and getting drafted by the worst team in the league. It was intended for players to profit off of themselves and not as a means to out-recruit the next guy. The transfer portal has allowed universities, boosters, etc., to absolutely circumvent the recruiting process.
Mm-hmm.
And college football specifically has become the minor league of the NFL. Volley Polly wanted us to talk about the XFL-USFL merger. We're going to talk about that next week. Because right now, this seems like the minor leagues. When you have eight guys from a team that's projected to get into the transfer portal, all of a sudden they sign new deals to stick around? This isn't college sports. And I'm with you. There was when I found out the names of all the guys that were supposed to be leaving South Carolina, I immediately was like, you know what? I don't care anymore. I don't care about next season. I don't care about the NCAA football game. I don't care. I just don't. Because how are you supposed to build a program? See, back in the day, like when Spurrier came, when Muschamp came, it was about, all right, give them 3 years. Let them phase out the old regime's players. Right. Get right in there, guys. Let's see what they can do. We can't do that anymore. Because you have to be active in the transfer portal. You have to get guys for only a year or two. In order to build something, there is no building organically from the ground up anymore.
No, no.
And to me, as a South Carolina fan, we don't stand a chance because we don't have the resources like in Alabama, like a Texas A&M, like a Southern Cal, like an Ohio State, a Michigan, name, you know, it goes on and on.
Yeah.
And so it's ruining college football.
We're going to end up in the land of haves and have-nots, and the haves are going to be a list of about 10 schools.
Yep. You're right. Absolutely right.
It's ruining it. It's bad. We need to do so. How do we fix it? I don't know how we fix it, but we got to figure it out.
You're going to have to break away from the NCAA and create regulations. That's all you can do. The NCAA was behind the eight ball from the get go, and now that NIL has been approved, and the NCAA couldn't keep up. The NCAA right. has to come crashing down for major college sports. I'm talking football, baseball, basketball, in order for these NIL and the transfer portal to be regulated, because otherwise you're going to keep seeing this college free agency, and it's going to continue to ruin college sports. Bill, anybody else you want to shout out before we head out tonight?
No, just awesome show. That was fun.
Yeah, it was a great time. Thanks to Desmond Johnson. We almost spent the entire hour and 15 minutes or so with us talking college football playoff and NFL news. Love to hear his insight. Again, you can catch me on his show, Franchise Players, later on this week over on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, as well as the Cat Cave on Tobacco Road Sports Radio's YouTube channel and the Keep Pounding Podcast Network, wherever you get your podcast. Thanks, everybody who participated in the chat. Sorry we didn't actually get to read some of the comments. We were deep into conversation. But I do want to appreciate everybody having the conversation in the chat and being a part of the show with us. And hopefully you come back next week to talk more football, because we are going to be getting into some of the bowl games and a lot of NFL talk starting next week. For Banker Bill, it's your guy, Bully Rye. Thanks, everybody, for being here. And we'll see you next week right here on Tap Outs and Touchdowns.